you as a candidate need to prove to them that you're the best investment. Now, if you don't believe that yourself, why would I believe that in you? And so it comes down to the mindset of getting ready for that interview, right? You need to be able to go into that interview strong, positive, knowing that you are that person for the job.
Welcome to the Final Round Podcast, where our mission is to help you knock out the competition and land your dream job. My name is AJ Eckstein, and I'm a recent college graduate, a strategy consultant, a five-time intern, and the founder of the Career Coaching Company. Have you ever wondered why only a few people get past the final round interview and land the job offer? Join me in the ring as I speak with recruiters at top companies to learn the secrets why certain applicants get knocked out and others are still standing after the final round.
This episode is brought to you by HireRect, the first chat-based hiring app. More about them later in the show.
Now, let's jump into the ring and get you past the final round.
Today, we are joined by Daniel Botero, who is a former lead campus recruiter for Pepsi, one of the world's largest consumer packaged goods companies. He is currently the founder of Mastering College to Career, a best-selling author, international keynote speaker, and a top-rated podcaster. Join me in welcoming him to the final round.
What is going on, everybody? We are coming at you live from the final round studio. I am so excited to have a very special guest for a very special episode. Please give a warm welcome for Daniel Botero. Daniel, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent. Super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's always great to have another podcaster on the show, and we'll talk about your podcast throughout the episode. But I really want to talk about, you know, starting with your passion for self-improvement. And myself, as well as a couple people on our team, did a deep dive into your LinkedIn, your social media, all of the amazing career content that you posted over the years. And I think one of the biggest things and the biggest themes that you always talk about is constantly trying to improve both personally and professionally, as well as you're just very open to sharing your personal story. For instance, if it was being a first generation college student, which you were, as well as a transfer student coming from community college, which actually I was as well. So we shared that similarity. So I'd love if you can share with our audience, just to really start off the episode, what have you learned through this commitment to self-improvement? And how has that been a catalyst to where you are today?
Well, I would definitely not be where I am today if it wasn't for me identifying that self-improvement and investing in myself pays the best dividends, right? There was this guy who was like the godfather of personal development. He's the reason why every influencer is an influencer. His name is Zig Ziglar. And he talked about Automobile University. And he said something that I'll never forget. He said, if you consume one book a week and you do that for 5 years in a row, you have consumed enough content to be in the 1% of any profession. Now, imagine if you did that for the rest of your life. It would be impossible for you not to be successful. And that hit home to me. Now, for me, I've always been very competitive. And if I know that someone has done that goal, somebody that I personally know has done something, if they can do it, I can do it. And so I started to challenge myself to listen to one audiobook a week. And then that led to me going through the whole library of self-development books in about 3 years. And then from there, I started buying books myself and started reading them. And in the beginning, you don't see the change. That's like anything else in life. Like if you were looking to lose weight or going to the gym, in the beginning, you hate it. Then you learn to love it. And that's what happened to me. I started to love the process, started to see the change. I started to see how the decision-making that I did started to change, how the people I build relationships started to change. And that then started paying dividends, started getting better jobs, started doing better at my job, started doing better at school, started having better relationships, and it changed my life. And ever since then, it's become a habit.
Well, I think one of the coolest things about your story is you said that growing up, you weren't the best reader, you couldn't finish a book. Fast forward today, and you're actually an author. That's one of the coolest things right there, is that you didn't let maybe that impediment stop you, but you said, let's try something different. Let's listen to audiobooks, and let me actually go write a book in the future. And, you know, I think all of these goals that you've set yourself up for, I think that you've really told yourself that you can do it. And we saw that you are someone who posts a lot of pictures of your vision boards. And I'd love if you can talk about what has the impact been using vision boards to really envision your life and your goals and your success?
Yeah, look, I think it comes down to this. And anybody listening to this, you have to realize that everything happens twice. It first happens in your head and then it's created in real life. And so if you don't allow it to happen in your head first, in your vision, right, then it will for sure never happen in real life. It will for sure never happen in your life. And so I think I read the book, The Secret. I don't know if you've heard of that book. And it just talked about the power of visualization. And to me, when I first watched it, I'm like, oh, that's like magic, voodoo. Like, and to be quite honest, I struggle with religion, right? Even though I grew up Roman Catholic family, I struggle with it. So I'm like, I just don't understand how this is going to help me. But the reality is that vision boards allow me to focus. And focus is everything, AJ. Like, focus is everything. And so when I'm sitting in my office and I literally, it's in front of me. So when I look up, it allows me to identify what's important and it helps me prioritize what I could do today to then ultimately reach those goals. And so to me, vision boards and writing out my goals have become an important part of my day because of the fact that it helps me make sure that I'm utilizing my time correctly, which then leads to actions that generates those results.
And I think a lot of our listeners are job seekers, right? They are looking for maybe that first internship or that first shot at an entry-level job post-grad. How can you use a vision board, whether you actually make one or just write it down or even just believe it, to really get that first opportunity into the job world?
Yeah, I think it goes back to focus, right? Like, here's the thing. If we don't plan our day, if we don't plan our time, then someone else will plan it for us. Right. If I don't have anything on my calendar and my friend calls me like, hey, man, you want to grab some lunch? Or hey, man, you want to go watch the new Bond movie? You're like, yeah, absolutely. But if I have a vision board and I look at it consciously, then it allows me to be strategic and put it on my calendar, which then relates me to taking the action. So as a job seeker, let's say I have a vision board of the top 10 companies I want to get into. Now I'm saying, okay, what does it take to get there? And now I'm thinking about it more. Now my friends see that and they can be like, hey man, you're always talking about Google. You're always talking about PepsiCo. I don't know if I ever told you, but my aunt works at Amazon. She happens to be in HR, super weird. And you might think it's luck, but it's like the more you communicate your goals and the more people know what you stand for, the more that people can help you. And so I think that to me as a job seeker, having a vision board will allow you to one, plan your time, two, help people understand what you're looking for so that they can help you.
And I love that topic of just really believing that you can do it. We had a Facebook recruiter on, shout out Nikki Woodall, a few episodes back on season one. And the biggest advice that she gave to get into any of the FANG companies, right? The Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, or just the big companies that have the big names that are just scary for a lot of candidates who might not have a lot of experience, is believing that you can do it, right? And it's not just putting these companies on a pedestal and saying that they only look at one candidate in the whole world, but saying that you can do it and envisioning yourself and talking about it so much that you actually can put pen and paper and make it happen. And I remember when I was going through the job recruitment process and I had a couple final round interviews, I mean, little did I know I'd start the final round podcast, so it kind of goes back full circle. I had a couple of the company logos that I was recruiting for that were dream companies on my screensaver of my phone to make sure that every time I'd go on my phone and unlock it, I would not try to waste time on social media, but constantly kept telling myself that I could do it and I can envision myself there. So I love that concept of making a vision board, whether it's actually making the board or just writing it down on your notes. And I think that could really help a lot of our audience. And you know, another thing that we saw on your social media is you competed in the 75 Hard Challenge. What is this challenge?
So I'm gonna tell you what I had to do and then I'll tell you what the challenge is.
Okay.
So for 75 days in a row, I had to do two workouts, at least 45 minutes each. One of them had to be outside. I had to read 10 pages a day. I had to drink 1 gallon of water, no cheat meals, no alcohol. And it sounds like a fitness challenge, right? Gallon of water, two workouts, no cheat meal, no alcohol, right? But it's a mental challenge. I like to challenge myself. And so 3 years ago, I did triathlons. Now I'm training for marathons. Like that was then I was doing the 75 Hard. So to me, that challenge was a mental challenge, something that was really tough, that very few people can do it or actually get through it all. And if I can do that, it allows me to keep my grit. So let me back up a little bit. Grit, if you've never heard of that word, grit, it's just determination, right? Not giving up. Grit is the number one indicator of success. But what happens is, the more success you find, the more comfortable you get. And so the less grit you have, right? Because I already have what I want. I already have the house. I have the wife. So then maybe I don't try as hard as I did 3 years ago when I started the business. So by doing those challenges that force me, it allows me to make sure that I never lose that grit, which is how it's made me the success person that I am today.
And I love how you said that you also are a competitive person outside of your normal day-to-day, your normal job, whether it's your business or when you were working as a recruiter at PepsiCo. And I actually did the same thing. I recently completed my first Olympic triathlon. So great to meet not only another podcaster, but another triathlete. And it really, like you said, is once you get and you beat one hurdle, you get to one pinnacle of whatever that goal may be, the summit of whatever mountain, you know, if you say that's it, then your whole life is like, where is it going to go? It's going to flatline, right? But you have to keep looking for new mountains to climb, new people to create challenges together. And I love that thought of really understanding what grit is. And would you say that candidates put enough emphasis on the grit side of recruiting?
You know, that's such an awesome question because you're right. Like, you have to have the mindset in order to get the job. Look, if you don't believe you're the candidate for that job or for that company or a fan company or, like, you know, whatever company it is, why would they hire you? Like, think about this for a second. Every company, regardless of its size, has limited resources. Therefore, when they're hiring, they're making an investment, right? Because if they're going to pay you $100,000, AJ, they can't use that money to buy a new truck for Amazon deliveries. They can't use that money to buy more software. They can't use that money for marketing. They can't use the money for anything else. So they're saying, we believe that this $100,000 would be better used hiring AJ because either AJ is going to save me over $100,000 or make me over $100,000. So you as a candidate need to prove to them that you're the best investment. Now, if you don't believe that yourself, why would I believe that in you? And so it comes down to the mindset of getting ready for that interview, right? You need to be able to go into that interview strong, positive, knowing that you are that person for the job. And if you show hesitations, why would they give you a shot? If I came to you trying to sell you something or trying to have you invest in something, and I'm hesitant, and I'm not sure if my idea is going to work, and I might lose your money, the odds are you're not going to invest in me. And so I think the mindset plays an important part of the job search process. And here's the reality. It is hard, right? Job search is ups and downs. You're going to get rejected. It's part of it. You're going to deal with some mental health issues. It's part of it, right? And that's why you have to work on your mindset. And you're right, AJ. I don't think it's talked about it enough.
And so I think that earlier on in this interview, just a few minutes ago, we spoke about envisioning where you want to be, whether that's just being at a top company or whatever company that may be for you in the career world. Then we spoke about mindset, right? Really believing you can do it and just getting mentally prepared for it. Then you spoke about grit and saying that nothing's going to stop you. You're going to talk about Amazon so much that your friends are like, all right, you practically already work there. You're probably best friends with Jeff Bezos at this point. And guess what happens? You get a job at Amazon. And now it seems like we're taking the conversation down the route of sales, right? And I personally, and I agree with you that not enough candidates sell themselves. And I've met some of the most brilliantly talented candidates who have the perfect resume, the perfect LinkedIn, great GPA, go to Harvard, all these amazing things. But someone who might not be as qualified actually gets the role because they've sold themselves. And maybe that candidate was too humble in the recruitment process. And like I always say, there's no humility in the recruitment process. And I know for you, you actually started off your career in the sales world, right? You spent about 6 years at a sales role at Universal Orlando Resort. So what lessons have you learned during those 6 years in that sales role?
I think everybody's in sales. And so the first thing you need to realize is we're in sales. I am a strong believer that sales is about creating win-win situations. The sales is about solving problems. Sales is an exchange, right? So if I'm selling you this pen for $10, it's because I'm confident that the value that this pen will provide you is more than $10. If I am selling my career coaching services, I'm confident that the value that I'm giving is a lot more than that, that you're going to get a return on investment. And I think that's what drives our economy, right? Is this exchange of services and allows to do win-win. And I think the best salespeople are the ones who do a good job at understanding clients' needs and solving them. And the bigger the problems you solve, the more you will grow, the more you will get paid, the more you'll get promoted, and so on.
So can you give me an example? Because I feel like it seems, and I think we both agree, that candidates don't do a good enough job of selling themselves. Can you give me an example of what a candidate might do or what they should do when they're going through this recruitment process, whether they're starting those initial calls with networking or maybe they're in that final round interview?
Yeah. So in the final round of interview, I'm going to give you an example, right? I had a student choose in the final round of interview for American Airlines for a consumer behavioral role. Now, as she's interviewing, she understands that the role was about helping improve the boarding process. If you've ever flown on a plane, it doesn't matter, every airline, the boarding process is not fun. Her job was going to be working on how to improve the boarding process. Now, she's a consumer behavior scientist, not a salesperson. So when we were working on this together, we talked about, hey, at the end of the day, you're an investment. You have to sell to the hiring manager, which are ultimately the ones who make the final decision and who get hired. And then I told her, I'm like, it comes down to sales. It comes down to numbers. So I said to her, and I said, like, have you ever calculated if you could improve the boarding process by 5 minutes, what would that mean to American Airlines in dollars, right? Not only would the customers be more happy by 5 minutes, even though they probably wouldn't notice the difference between a boarding time being 45 minutes and being 40 minutes, but what would that save them in the plane being parked at the terminal? What would that save them in staff hours when you multiply it? Like, so she ended up doing this equation and saying, hey, I believe that my findings will allow us to improve boarding time by at least 5 minutes, which would then result to millions of dollars in savings. She got the job, right? She sold the idea. She sold how that was going to just pay for herself. That's a good example of her being able to sell herself and saying, hey, here's how I add value. Here's how I solve your problem. Here's how I'm going to improve the boarding experience, but here's what it means to you in dollars, right? Because even if it's a nonprofit, they care about the dollars. They care about the bottom line.
And I think that's such a great example. Congratulations to your mentee who was able to get that job at American Airlines. I love that thought of every job is sales, whether it's a sales title or whether it's an engineering title, whatever it may be. And after your 6 years of sales experience at Universal, you then did a complete 180 pivot and became a recruiter at PepsiCo. And I'd love if you can share how you were able to make this career pivot without having prior experience in the consumer packaged goods space or even recruiting experience in general.
Yeah. So I worked at Universal when I was in high school and college. So that was more like one of those jobs you did during college. So that even though I was in sales and I was kind of working in Universal, but when I worked at PepsiCo, I was in a management training program. Now in that management training program, I got really involved starting out in campus recruitment and then ultimately took over campus recruitment for one of the core schools in our region because I was just so passionate about like helping people get really good jobs. And for me, being the first person out of my group of friends to graduate college, getting a really good job with a Fortune 500 company, I saw how my life changed. So then that's essentially, I was still in sales, AJ, but the change was as a side project, I took on recruitment. I started doing all the career fairs, started doing all the info sessions, started doing all the first round of interviews. And even when it came to interns, there was only one interview and that was with me. And essentially, if I believed that they were good enough, then we would put them into the internship program. So it's still sales. Even when I go to campus, I have to talk to students and tell them why PepsiCo instead of Coca-Cola or Nabisco or Procter & Gamble. So still sales. It's not that much different, except I'm not selling chips. I'm not selling Doritos. I'm selling the company. I'm selling the career. I'm selling the dream.
I love how you were still selling, but what you were selling is different, right? And before you were selling yourself as a candidate, now you're selling why the company makes the most sense for candidates to apply and maybe for the interns to accept the return offer when they have other competing offers on the table. And you mentioned that as a lead campus recruiter for one of the top schools in Florida for PepsiCo's recruiting efforts, you did a lot of campus recruiting. And I've gotten the chance through this podcast, The Final Round, to interview a couple of campus recruiters, and they spend a lot of time on campus. They practically are students there. They just enroll and maybe live on campus. But what are some ways that students can excel in career fairs as they're going back to in-person and going away from virtual with the pandemic?
Yeah, what an amazing question. So I think career fairs is a must. Every student. Now, the school that I did was just the University of Central Florida. Less than 20% of students actually attend career fair, which is insane to me. Now, here's some advice on the career fair itself. Understand the companies need you more than you need them. Understand what it takes for a company to be there. They're investing thousands of dollars to be there, let alone the 3 to 4, 5, 7 people that they took off doing their job to come to the career fair. So if they don't hire, depending on the size of the company, like for us, if we don't hire 3 to 5 people, it was a fail. Like there's no return on investment. So understand that the people that are there in that table representing the company, they want to hire you. Like they want to hire you. So what you need to do is make it easy for them. And the way you make it easy for them is don't ask the most common question, which is very stupid, is, hey, what are you hiring for? Like that just disqualifies you right away, right? Because here's the thing, your career services has posted a list. The job is probably posted on Handshake already or whatever your university uses. And so the information is out there. And if you can't take 5 minutes, especially now that we all have a phone that has internet and you can say, okay, PepsiCo's at the career fair. What are they hiring for? Okay, they're hiring for supply chain and management, but they take any majors. If you go to someone and say, hey, what are you hiring for? Your resume goes to the no pile. If you go to me and say, hey, Daniel, I'm very excited to meet you. I've been looking into PepsiCo. I know that you're hiring for the sales associate program. I know that you're looking for leadership, good communication skills, and work ethic. And for the past 6 months, I have built my leadership skills by becoming the vice president of my business fraternity. I've built my communication skills by doing an elective and doing Toastmasters. And to show you that I have good work ethic, not only have I been a full-time student, but I've done 4 internships and worked part-time at Universal for the past 4.5 years. I would love the opportunity to interview with you tomorrow because I know you reserve some rooms at Career Services. I am telling you, you do 1/4 of what I just said, you got an interview. Like, okay, if we have time, let's spend more time here because this is so important, right? A lot of times, if the company that you're speaking to does not have offices in that city, that means they commuted there, either drove there, are staying in a hotel, or flew there. They most likely have interview rooms lined up on campus the next day. It's going to happen. You know who knows that information? Career Services. And you know who will tell you that? Career Services. So all that information is out there. So they want to give you interviews. I am the recruiter. I don't want to sit in that room by myself all day with no interviews, right? And so no one's doing that. No one's taking the time to research that. Now, imagine there's 4 people in the PepsiCo table. What if you did the line 4 times and got to meet every single one of them? Like, what would that show? That's grit. You're showing me how bad you want it. And to me, I'm not saying, hey, that's going to get you a job, AJ. Like, that's not going to guarantee you a job. But what will guarantee you is the interview. And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying take this job search process one step at a time. Your resume has one job, to get you an interview. Going to the career fair has one job, get you to the interview. Take it one at a time. That strategy that I just shared with you, if you execute it, you'll get interviews. Now, at that point, you then have to get ready for the interview. And then we can talk about other strategies for that. But now you're 80% done. Like, you just beat 85% of all your candidates. Less than 10%, less than 15% of candidates are really getting an interview. Now, the only thing that can stop you from doing that is that a lot of these big companies have some sort of an assessment, whether it is to measure your IQ, to measure your personality, to measure to see your fit for the job. Those assessments are meant there to make sure that we're not discriminating. And so if I was super impressed by you and I move you down to the interview, a lot of companies won't interview until you take that assessment. And if you fail the assessment, I can't interview you for 6 months. It doesn't matter how good, how much I love you. So that's the only disclaimer. But a lot of those assessments, they can be hard to pass sometimes, or sometimes just got to be honest.
I think all of that is such amazing advice. And I remember when I was in school and I was a bit younger, I think there's a stigma to whether you're a freshman or a sophomore, where you kind of know that you're not eligible for most opportunities to go wear a suit, a tie, a jacket, whatever it is, go to the career fair, because a lot of your friends will be having fun in those early years. But I think those early years are when you actually build up the relationships, and maybe you meet Daniel, the recruiter, you say that, hey, I know I'm not eligible, but I'd love to meet you. And then next year when you're eligible, you actually get a chance to meet them. And, you know, I've always said to our audience, I basically preach this and I really try to practice what I preach, is you always want to do a little bit more than the next person. And if we break it out into a funnel, and there's a group of people who hear about the career fair and sign up. And there's another group of people who hear about the sign up and actually attend. Then there's people who do the research and go to the Pepsi table. Then there's people who research the career center, see what opportunities are on the table, and then actually talk to you. And then the last one is do all of that, plus really align what you're looking for to what they've done. So I think all of those are such great strategies to really master career fairs.
Yeah. Imagine you understand every single company that has a table at the career fair has paid thousands of dollars to be there just so they can get in front of students. But what if you, AJ, came to me and says, hey, Daniel, I'm part of this student organization. We have about 50 members. I would love to have you be a speaker. The value that you provide that recruiter is priceless, right? It's free for you to do. Now imagine if you're a sophomore and a freshman who did it. Now you build a relationship and have the relationship for 4 years.
Well, I think such great tips on campus recruiting. And for everyone listening, make sure you get up off your bed. And we're so used to now attending career fairs or whatever, maybe recruiting events, networking events virtually. As things start to go back in person, if you're okay with it, you know, definitely go out of your way to meet people like Daniel, because you'll never know what could happen.
And as much as you can prepare for career fairs, the numbers are still not in candidates' favor, since there is often 1 to 2 company recruiters for hundreds of candidates. So for all of the job seekers listening, while you are waiting in the long line to talk to a recruiter, I highly recommend downloading the free mobile app called HireRect, the first chat-based hiring app, where you can actually message and video chat directly with recruiters, hiring managers, and even founders. And for the employers listening to the final round, HireRect is the quickest and simplest way to hire. With over 100,000 active job seekers and 10,000 verified recruiters in the app, what are you waiting for? I will drop a link to HireRect in the show notes below. Now, back to the show.
And I guess the last question on this thread is what can you share with our audience just about the overall consumer packaged goods industry? Since I think you're one of the first former recruiters that we've had on the show who's come from CPG versus tech or consulting or banking.
Yeah, I would say the first thing about CPG is that it's something that's kind of really recession-proof, right? Like you're always going to really need products, right? And let's say there is a recession, the more people go to grocery stores, which means that they buy more consumer packaged goods. So that's one thing. I think to know in terms of building a career there is that CPG are known for having great leadership programs, right? So I can tell you that when I worked at PepsiCo, I was actually recruited by a lot of tech companies, because they respect the management training programs that the CPG companies have, because you get access to leadership roles right off the bat. So as a sales associate, you're trained to become a district manager, where I'm managing a $10 million business less than a couple of months out of college, which in any other industry is really rare for you to have that opportunity to be in a management role, managing that many things. Even when I left my role, I was managing key accounts like Target, CVS, and Walgreens for the Southeastern United States. And I did over $100 million in sales every year. So it's crazy amount of money. And that responsibility that I have would not happen in pretty much any other industry. And I think that CPG does that on purpose to be able to be competitive in attracting top talent. One of the things that you should know about CPG is that in the beginning of most of these careers, it's a lot of blue collar work, even though it's white collar pay. So because you are managing salespeople who are driving those trucks, they work at really bad hours. And you will work at those hours because that's what time the Walmart manager or the Target manager or the Publix manager will meet you. So it's like any industry, there's pros and cons. I think the leadership experience that you get is amazing. I think you get access to good training and development. There's a lot of structure. They're all essentially blue chip companies. They've been there forever. They know what business is. They're very analytical. And so you learn both how to manage people and how to look at data to make decisions. And so I think that is a really good jumping off base. Like if you use CPG and ever want to go somewhere else, whether it's consulting or tech or finance, other industries respect the CPG experience.
And you know, another one of our goals on the Final Round podcast, Daniel, is to really open up and just share other industry or career paths other than just the typical, let's say, banking, consulting, accounting, whatever it may be. So it's great to hear more about how awesome your experience was in CPG or consumer packaged goods space. And Daniel, it's no secret that you have a commitment to helping people, especially students, with career development, especially through mentorship, right? Would you agree that being a mentor is one of your main jobs?
Absolutely, man. I love it.
And, you know, at PepsiCo, I read that you mentored sales reps. Outside of work, you volunteer with Big Brothers, Big Sisters of America, and you were recently selected to be the flagship mentor for the Mentorship Accelerator hosted by a company called Canvas, which is the number one diversity recruiting platform. So who has been the most impactful mentor in your life?
That's hard, AJ, because I believe that you should have more than one mentor. I'm a strong believer that the best way to reach any goal is to learn from someone who's done it. And the reality is that no one's perfect. And so I hate to kind of go around your question, but the reality is that I've had many amazing mentors because I have had many amazing goals. As I hit those goals, those mentors stop being my mentors and they become friends, right? So give you an example. I have a mentor right now. His name is Carlos Gregory. He is an extremely successful business person. I meet with him once a month. We go over my business. We go over my number. He's like my board of directors. I have no doubt that in 2-3 years, I will be able to get to a similar level where it becomes like we're just friends. Now, does that mean that I stopped talking to Carlos because he's not my mentor anymore? No, I think actually we become really good friends and maybe I'll even see him more than once a month, right? So to be honest with you, I think any advice that I can give is find 3 people who want to accomplish the same goal with you and work with them to accomplish that goal. And then find 3 people that are trying to achieve a goal you've already accomplished and help them. And if you could do that, you'll be really successful.
And it's a never-ending cycle, right? Yeah. As you get new mentors, you come into that new title and that new role, and then you help people behind you, and it's constantly paying it forward. So yeah. I actually don't think it's a bad answer at all. It's not a workaround. I think the biggest takeaway that I heard from you is don't just get one mentor, latch on to them, and let them show you the way, but have multiple mentors. There's no shortage of mentors out there, and it doesn't have to be through an actual mentorship organization or through your school's alumni network. I've made friends just on LinkedIn who, you know, after a couple of calls, whether they have the mentor title or not, I consider them a mentor and I can reach out to them with questions that I have. And as big as people make other people seem, everyone has used a mentor to get where they want to go. And even the biggest people on the highest part of the food chain, even the CEOs of the biggest companies, have had mentors help them. So I think that get a lot of mentors and make sure that you pay it forward when you get the opportunity.
Yeah, have a board of advisors, right? And here's the thing, one really important thing, find a way to add value to them, because there's no such thing as a long-term relationship if it's not mutually beneficial.
So let's talk about that last thing. I have a question that was submitted from one of our audience members. Her name is Sam. And she said that she really wants to start networking. She's a bit younger in school, but the biggest thing that she can't wrap her head around is that, like you said, that it's very mutually beneficial and she doesn't feel like she has anything to give. What do students give to mentors who are already successful if they are so young in their career?
So, I mean, I'll go through it. So Carlos is someone who helps me in my business. And sometimes he finds value in giving back because someone has helped him. And that can be enough, right? So in this scenario for Carlos, he likes to help me because someone's helped him. Now, I always try to also find a way to add value to him. Now, he's not very active on LinkedIn, but there were some times that he really needed some visibility. So what did I do? Put him on my podcast. What did I do? I post about him and tag him, right? Because I have some clout on LinkedIn. So I utilize that. Now, a thing to note is you might not personally like be able to help them, but could you help someone that they care about? For example, same thing, Carlos. Carlos has a goddaughter who's about to go into college. His goddaughter might not listen to Carlos the same way she would listen to me, but can I help the goddaughter?
And I think one more thing to add on to that, because again, not everyone is super active on LinkedIn yet. And I'm saying yet because I constantly preach that LinkedIn is such an amazing platform, as I'm sure you definitely believe, Daniel. You know, it really is an endless opportunity. But I think one of the biggest things that you can give is just the opportunity to give back to the other person, because, you know, oftentimes during the day, it can be very cut and dry. And, you know, you don't have the interaction that you had in school, let's say. And I mean, the biggest thing you can do after you speak with someone and they give you some time, especially a lot of networking mentorship can happen on the weekends when you're not working or in the late nights, but making sure that you follow up with that person. You thank them. I have a lot of mentees. And the biggest thing that I always, you know, get a bad taste in my mouth is that either A, they don't follow up and thank you because time is very difficult right now to balance everything. But second of all, is taking the advice that we share, right? Daniel, if you meet with me for 2 hours on a Saturday, obviously you have a family, you have kids, and you want to spend time with them and you give time to help me and you tell me to get more involved on campus. And I don't take that advice, but there could be another candidate where the best mentees are the ones who take your advice and say, Daniel, such great advice. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Fast forward 2 months, I'm going to reach back out saying, Daniel, guess what? I'm now the VP of mentorship for X organization. And I'm going to take your advice about the career fairs. And here's a picture of me at the career fair with my suit and tie with my friends and really taking that advice to heart, because oftentimes people don't want to go unheard. They don't want to feel like their voice is just out there. And then it just, nothing happens. It falls flat. So I think the biggest thing you can do as a mentee is make sure that you're receptive to what they're saying. You can take it to heart and you can share that you actually took what they said and it's great value.
Genius, 1000%.
Awesome. And shouting out to our audience, if you guys have any other questions, that was a question submitted from Sam. So Sam, thank you so much for submitting that. Feel free to reach out to Daniel on LinkedIn or myself on LinkedIn and we'll drop the URLs in the show notes. And one of the last questions that we'll ask today, Daniel, is obviously you had a career starting in sales, then you pivoted to campus recruiting at PepsiCo, and now you are the founder of your own company called Mastering College to Career. If everyone is watching this video, they can see your merchandise, Mastering College to Career, or your background with the wallpaper on the side. And obviously over the 8 years you've been running this business, you've helped over 1,000 job seekers become people who have secured jobs. So if you can boil it down to just a few of the most common mistakes that candidates make, what have you experienced when helping them get jobs?
Yeah, so I think major mistake is that you assume that by applying online, you're doing what you need to do to get a job. And the reality, especially if you're an international student, it's very difficult. And you have to understand that visibility is actually more important than ability when it comes to getting your first job. So the most qualified candidate does not mean that you're going to get the job. If the company doesn't even know you exist, then you don't have a shot. And so you need to understand that visibility becomes crucial. Now, how do you gain visibility? The career fair is a good way to get visibility, right? Networking on LinkedIn is a good way to get visibility. Getting referrals from family and friends is a good way to get visibility. But visibility is very, very important. Now, the second thing is you assuming that your resume gets you jobs. Now, your resumes are important. Don't get me wrong. But your resume only has one job, and that's to get you to the interview. So focus on visibility to get you to an interview, right? 80% of all jobs are filled through networking and referrals. Second thing is, once you do get to the interview, remember, they're going to ask you a bunch of questions, but it really comes down to one question. Why are you the best investment for the company. So focus on answering that. How do you help the company make money or save money? Every question that they ask you is about the company. It's not about you. Even when you talk about, tell me about yourself. It's not, tell me about your whole life story, AJ. It's, AJ, tell me the parts about your life that's helped you get ready to be a good investment for my company today.
I love that. Yeah. And you know, it's amazing that you really dedicated this company to not only just helping any student, but really focusing on the students that come from much more difficult backgrounds, whether they're international students, underrepresented, or first gen. So this is an amazing company. I'll make sure to drop a link to Mastering College to Career website in our show notes. And as we're getting closer to the final round of this episode, Daniel, and if you've listened to any of our episodes and for our audience, they know exactly where we're going. We have one final question that we ask every guest. And that final question, Daniel, is what is the best piece of advice that you can share with our audience to help them get past the final round interview and land their dream job?
This is it. Always moving forward. Promise me this, wherever you are, just between me and you, you're going to ask this question last for every interview, including the final round. Here's the question. As your last question, you say, AJ, thank you so much for your time. I'm interested to know, is there any particular reason why you think I might not be a good fit for this role? I'm going to repeat it one more time. Is there any particular reason why you think I might not be a good fit for this role? Now, here's why you need to ask that question. When you ask that question, you're going to get instant feedback. Even if they don't say a word, their body language will give you instant feedback. And you'll know exactly where you stand. Because the worst thing you want to do is thinking you did amazing in the interview and then get those emails that says we've decided to go with another candidate. Now, here's what can happen when you ask that question. One, you did great in the interview and they'll tell you, hey, AJ, I think you did fantastic. I don't really see any reason why you wouldn't be a good fit. If that happens, follow up with, amazing, I'm glad you feel the same way I do. What are the next steps? That's best case scenario. Is it always going to happen? Probably not. Let's be realistic. Second scenario, if it's a veteran recruiter or hiring manager, they can just avoid the question by saying something like, hey, AJ, we still have some other interviews to go to. We'll let you know. If that happens, then you just say, no problem. Is it okay with you if I follow up with you next week? I'm very interested in this role because I think that my ABC I bring to the table will be a good addition to the company, right? Whatever. You just finish off explaining why you're a good fit. Worst case scenario, they say, hey, AJ, I just don't think you have enough blank. You don't have enough leadership experience as an example. If they tell you something like that, this is your one chance to overcome their objection. Remember, guys, we are all in sales. And we want to get that objection on the table because what you don't want is you walk away, they have that objection, and then you get a rejection. But now you have one chance to save that interview. So if the example is you don't have enough leadership skills and you do have those skills, but you just forgot to talk about it because you were nervous, then you can talk about it. Or maybe they said, hey, we're looking for someone who has a little bit more experience in Python or a technical skill. And you don't have that, the way you can overcome that is by talking about how you're going to gain those skills and talk about your game plan and how you're a fast learner and how if given the opportunity, you're going to spend 40 hours a week after work making sure that you become a Python ninja, right? And so it allows you to overcome that. And that's my advice.
And there you have it. Across multiple episodes in the final round, I have not had one guest talk about that specific final question in the final round interview. So Daniel, on behalf of myself, the audience and the entire final round team, it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I completely agree with Daniel that having a strong mentor or two can change your career trajectory. So my ask for all of our audience members today is for you to go out and get a mentor of your own, whether it is from your school's alumni network, an ally in your community, a friend who is a few years older than you, or someone who works in your dream job. The worst thing that happens is they say no, but the best thing that happens is you land a lifelong mentor who will put you ahead of your competition. Until the next episode of the final round, keep fighting, and I will see you in the ring.